that will mute you. If everyone could just press number 6. Tom, there goes all the popcorn. We're hearing lots of popcorn sounds there. Okay, if you want to get back in later on, folks, when we're asking questions, all you have to do is press 6 again, and that will bring you back into the conversation. Okay, I'm just going to see if we can put just a general muting on right now.
Yes. All right.
Okay, there we go. Tom?
Sounds better. Alert? Yes, we're
That's
ready.
That's a lot better. Okay, so going on, I just want to let you know, folks, we train at Facilitation First. Over 1,000 people a year how to facilitate in public and private workshops. And I lead a team that assesses, designs, and facilitates close to 70 meetings per year, focus on everything from strategic planning to difficult public consultation meetings. Audiences include Aboriginal leadership teams, where they call me Little Bear. Did you know that, Tom?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they call me Little Bear, and we do corporate executive teams all the way to shop floor teams. I've edited 4 books on team facilitation, and I'm passionate about helping teams to collaborate effectively using the tools and techniques of facilitation, one of which I'm going to share today with you. I'd like to also introduce my co-speaker now, Tom Heck.
Thank you, Michael, and what a pleasure it is to be on the call with you and everyone else for Teams in Trouble number 7. It's kind of hard to believe we started this last year in the summer, and so a little bit about me. I am a trainer. I do a lot of training actually through the teleclasses like this, and also travel to deliver live workshops. And most of my work revolves around experiential learning and using experiential learning to open doors and create opportunities for getting what's inside of us as far as knowledge and understanding and creating a context for that and being able to move forward with that. And so I operate a website called teachmeteamwork.com. And train through that site about 22,000 people in 85 countries, and send out a newsletter and develop multimedia training CDs, and I've written a couple books. And so there's a lot that Michael and I have to share, and we're having so much fun with these Teams in Trouble teleclasses that we decided to just keep rolling and see where they lead us, and they've actually created some neat opportunities. So, and speaking of opportunities, we've got an opportunity to share with everybody on the call. I'll be sharing more about that later in the call, but let's get back to Michael, if you want to introduce this process that we're going to share today.
Okay, very good. Just before I introduce the process, I just want to just make let everyone know for your own knowledge, as we're walking through the process today, we're walking through, Tom's going to provide a team exercise, I'm going to provide a team facilitation exercise. We will be providing these exercises for you respectively on Tom's blog. You'll be able to get him at tomheck.blogs.com. Again, tomheck.blogs.com. And you'll be able to get my facilitation process, which is very robust, just like Tom's exercise. And that you can get from www.facilitationfirst.com, where it says Teams in Trouble 7 Free Problem Solving Design. So really what we want you to do is just sit back, listen to what we're saying, try to take it in and not worry about writing everything down. Does that capture it, Tom?
I think that does. That's good.
Okay.
You're always so good about reminding people about web pages and where we're putting this stuff. So, yes, we are recording this right now. And, by the way, we're going to be opening the call to some question and answers and clarifying points towards the end of this. So the format is we're going to describe the scenario, an activity, a process, and then we're going to open the call up for some question and answer. And that's one thing that you might want to do as far as writing is to, if you do have a question during this, is jot down a note, and we can always clarify and even apply it to, if we have time, to your specific scenario.
Excellent. And I just want to apologize up front on behalf of both Tom and I. We have over 110 people on this call. In fact, only 100 actually, because I know that not all always show up, and also this particular forum we're only allowed to have 100. So I apologize up front if we can't get to all of your questions, but again, you can email us and you can get access to us via our websites. So in terms of the process, all of you obviously have received the scenario, and I just want to embellish a little more on this sales marketing team and this whole kind of prototype development team that I was actually asked to come in and facilitate. In this particular team, it's a new company composed mostly of young, ambitious employees, and the thing that really strikes me was their passion about their work. So there really was this strength and passion, and people really committed to want to do their work, but not necessarily committed to working together. The process of acquiring these client specs up front all the way to prototype development was very transactional. When I started to assess what was going on, I noticed that it really was just a handoff process. So sales and marketing team would do their stuff, though they had a product development team member on board to kind of help them with the technical aspects with the sales and the scope development. They just essentially handed off what they felt was important or necessary to the product development team. And literally, because of the growth of this company, didn't have a lot of time to really kind of go back to the product development team and scope out, like, did you understand this? Does it make sense? They were already on to their next project. Whereas the product development team, though lots of good guys involved in this team, but there was a sense of arrogance, too, with this particular functional team. And so they, when they got the specs, they just, like, charged ahead with it. The product development member who assisted with the client scoping, this person was new, and what he confided with me was that he felt intimidated by the quick-talking, more experienced S&M members and wouldn't speak up during the initial meetings. He just felt like he just couldn't say what he needed to say. And bottom line, both the product development and the sales and marketing team were not communicating with each other in terms of status updates, interim meetings, in terms of problems. They were just doing it in their own fashion. So this was a pretty ugly event when I came in. And so I spoke to Tom. I brought it up to Tom and said, you know, Tom, if I were to do this over again and wanted to create some kind of awareness around what was going on before we went into a facilitation exercise, what would you do? And so, Tom, yeah. I'm going to ask you to take it away at this point.
And I actually have a couple questions for you on this. As you described it, we've already discussed this prior to this call, and I kind of just got an insight, and that is, from a facilitation standpoint, when you go in to work with a group like this, can you just share the mindset, or if you even see a difference in mindset between product development types of people and sales and marketing types of people?
Yeah, good point.
Okay.
Good point. I really felt the product development as a whole, that kind of group, was very analytical.
So very left brain.
Yeah, okay. Really left brain. Whereas the sales and marketing, like, let's go do it. You know, let's put on the show. Let's build the barn. You know, kind of a Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland kind of scenario, which really attests to my age here, folks. that's what it speaks more to. So I really sense that they were very expressive, driver-oriented people. Let's get, you know, input, output, get the job done, let's move on.
Mm-hmm.
So these people were very results-oriented, whereas what I found with the product development, which consisted of engineers, analytical people, they wanted to go into it in more specifics. But because of this personality dynamic, there really was a huge interpersonal rift between both functions.
Okay. And I think that's important for our listeners to get, is that this everybody's on the same team, that's number one, but they are approaching their work, their daily work, from just a completely different way of looking at the world. You know, sales and marketing are out there and typically, you know, right-brained and more emotive and, like you said, whereas product development is more analytical. And now I can relate to both of these groups because I have a background in technology education, and I like technology, and hanging out with technology-oriented people, they can often be, when you match them up with like a sales and marketing type of group, they'll look at each other and go, what's wrong with them? They're both saying that.
Yeah.
And so the fun part is to say now, okay, how are we going to get these two groups together? Because the scenario is there's a handing off of problems, creation of problems, and one, what is a problem? And one group might say, well, the problem is an opportunity. And so because, for example, sales and marketing goes out there, finds a client, or the client finds them, and they express a problem that needs to be solved. And
right.
So a problem, in a lot of ways, is a good thing. If people didn't have problems, well, you know, what would the product development team be doing in the first place? They wouldn't be developing products to solve problems.
So the suggestion here is just even the mindset of looking at problems.
Right. So going in, I think as the facilitator, it's important to say with the group is to perhaps have a dialogue around what is a problem and are problems good or bad and how do we address them. And one of the ways that I do that is to create that opening with a group of people, Michael, is through this exercise that I call the inhuman knot. And it's one of many that allow a group, and this is a great exercise to have multiple groups in a room. So, for example, how big was this group that you were working with?
Well,
sales and marketing was how big? How many people?
Well, in fact, what happened was in each of the teams, like each departments, we had in the sales and marketing team, we had about 20 people, but we didn't bring all 20 people.
Okay.
We just took a representation, so we actually brought in the managers.
Mm-hmm.
So we had the junior level manager, senior manager, and then also from the product development team, there was about 12.
Mm-hmm.
So we had all collectively together in the room, we had roughly around 12 people, representation from both.
Well, this is actually plays in well to this scenario then. So what I'm going to ask everyone to imagine is pieces of small diameter rope, and when I say small diameter, like what I refer to as parachute cord, I typically use nylon cord that's about 5 feet long, and I cut for every two people, I cut one section. So for 12 people, I'll have six sections of rope. And when I get a group to do this activity, I already have the ropes laid out on the ground. So I'm going to ask you to imagine three of these pieces of rope that are about 5 feet long, 4 to 5 feet long, laying on the ground in a straight line, but in the shape of an asterisk. Okay, so you lay one piece of rope down and then lay another piece of rope down on top of it, sort of to form an X shape, and then lay the third piece down. And so you sort of have a 6-point figure with these three straight lines laying on the ground. Now, and so for each group of, let's say, six, what I'm going to do is have separate asterisks on the ground, if you will. So you could do this activity with 100 people, what people are going to do is divide into teams of six and walk up to the pieces of rope, and then what I ask them to do in your mind, kind of visualize just groups of six standing around these pieces of rope and looking at them on the ground, not touching them yet. And so each group does this, and I ask everyone to pick up choose an end of a rope and pick it up with your right hand. Not that your right hand or left hand makes any difference, but pick up the end of it with your right hand. And then I say, what we're going to do for the rest of this time, until I say, you know, that this particular phase of the activity is over, is you cannot let go of that piece of rope. You can't cut it. mutilate it or do anything else to it. You just got to hang on to that piece of rope. And so imagine, let's go back to this group of 12 people, and I'm going to just say there's 6 sales and marketing and 6 product development team people. And each, the product development team is around their asterisk pieces of ropes, and 6 of the sales and marketing around their ropes. And then I say, here's what I'd like you to do for the next minute or two, and that is, while holding on to your piece of rope, I want you to create a knot, the best knot that you can, and the most difficult knot, if you will, a really good knot, without letting go of the rope. And then, so what you're, you can imagine is all these teams, these small teams, kind of weaving in and out of each other and walking around. And at this phase of the game, usually the energy of the room, the energy of the group is kind of laughing and having fun because they don't know what's coming next. They might anticipate it, and our callers might anticipate it as well. So after about a minute or so of creating a big knot, I say, okay, time out. Lay your knot on the ground. Everybody lay your ropes calmly on the ground. Okay, very good. Now I'd like you to switch places with another team. Okay, and at that stage of the game, Michael, you'll notice a shift in energy in the room because at this point some people are saying, uh-oh, I think I know what we're going to have to do. And so what they'll do is they'll walk over to the other group's knot, and then I say, okay, pick up a piece of rope with your right hand. Okay, from this point forward, you cannot let go of that rope. And here's what we're going to do. And now that I'm looking at each of the groups, and everybody's now holding on, they've moved to a different knot, their team of 6. They're all holding their rope, and what they're going to have to do now is untangle that knot. In other words, they've just been handed off a problem. And now this group of six is going to have to work together to solve somebody else's, to untangle somebody else's problem.
Right.
And this is when you see people having a dialogue. They're focused in. They're pointing, and because and there's 2 ways to play this. One is take as much time as you need to untangle this mess, and the other way to play it is you have 5 minutes to get this mess untangled. Well, depending on the group and how complicated a knot they were left, they may be able to complete it in a couple minutes, and it may take 5 minutes or so, just to give our listeners an idea of how long the time frame is. So now, to move on, so now imagine everybody's solved their knot. And by the way, if you add a time constraint, you'll notice that the pressure and the focus is increased. If you just say you have as much time as you like, there's no time limits, just untie the knot. You'll see a different approach. You'll see some people might disengage a little bit or not working as hard to untangle the knot. Now, I mention that because now at this stage of the game, I like to talk to the groups about exactly what you're going to be sharing with in your process, Michael, which is how do we consciously take a look at and solve the problems that we're given, and just go into an entire dialogue about problems. What are they? How do we generate them? Are we conscious about the problems that we hand off to somebody else? Because in this scenario that you've provided, Michael, sales and marketing went out, found a client who's got a problem. They've said, we're going to work with you to help you come up with the best solution. You know, what is it that this the solution will look like? They come back to product development and say, here's what our customer needs. Can you solve it? And in this such scenario, sales and marketing went back to the client, or there's been further dialogue with the client, and to refine what they need. In other words, the problem has been further refined so that we can come up with an even better solution. But oddly enough, typically in situations like this, product development teams say, just what you said in this scenario is, can't you control the client? You know, I have my whole team here working on solving this problem. It's as if someone said, we're going to untangle these ropes, now put them down, we're going to tangle them up again, now continue to untangle them. And
right.
And so there's frustration.
Huge.
And there's also a lack of trust. Is why, you know, what's going on here? So what I want to take a look at with the team is issues around trust, issues around handing off of problems, and what's best for the customer. Why are we even doing this?
Mm-hmm.
So, and by the way, I should say this, is that if you go to my blog now, tomheck.blogs.com, you can actually see a video of this and a brief write-up. I'm going to write a much more detailed write-up and more pictures. But if you click on on my blog, there's a archives on the left, and if you click on the December archives, scroll all the way down, you'll see a picture there at next to the last entry called Team Building Game Inhuman Knot.
Right.
So how does that tee that up for you, Michael?
You know what, I really like it. There's a couple of questions I have for you. The first thing is, now, I noticed when you started opening the scenario, you said that you would have the product development team in one team and then the sales and marketing in another.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because that really is a metaphor for how they work already. What would be your rationale for actually mixing them up right from the beginning? Is there a rationale for that?
I think that there is. And frankly, some of the reasons that you might not want to do the scenario I gave, which is product development team versus sales and marketing, is because it will only magnify, usually magnifies the emotions. So in other words, as a facilitator, you can kind of calm it down a level if you mix the groups.
Right.
And the reason being is because the product development team isn't looking over there and at each other. The two groups aren't going to be looking at each other going, oh, we're going to really hand it to them. We're going to really make a real mess of this and punish them, so to speak. But if you mix them up, it's what you can do. Well, there's two things that can happen. One is when you have a discussion, you can ask this, you know, Group A and Group B to discuss amongst themselves some questions that you pose and then share with a larger group. And in that scenario, what you have is a good mixture. But if you, that's when I really like to use that method. And if I feel like I can handle the animosity that could be developed by having just a product development team, just a sales and marketing group members, then I might go that route. But if already tensions are too high, I'll probably mix them.
Right. In this particular circumstance, I probably would, if I were to do it again, I would mix them up because the tensions were high.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that if I did it with just each team, it would have heightened the tension. Now, then again, you know, there's nothing wrong with heightened the tension because, you know, as long as we give them a process to actually then vent some of those concerns and then move on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas if we just leave them with the experience and that kind of heightened tension, which is not what we do, it probably would create even worse morale.
The point, I think that part of it is that why were you called in? You know, why are we called in as facilitators to address it? I mean, you don't want to just stir it up and leave it. And if you're going to stir things up, you know, shake a bee's nest or throw rocks at a bee's nest, so to speak, you've got to have the confidence and ability and the skills to be able to take it to the next step. And I think that that's why I like what you're about to offer as far as a process, because once you get there, once people are saying, yeah, but, you know, we're angry and we're doing this, you know, where do you take it next? And I think that that's what you have to offer.
And thank you. And what I'd like to, you know, the thing I like now at this point is that once we've done this exercise, hopefully we have some sense of what we mean by trust, what we mean or what are the implications around handing off a problem without really kind of collaborating and ultimately what's best for the customer. So there's been some ahas, hopefully for both both silos, to start beginning to think about this, the nature of where they're at and where they need to go. So what I'd like to do now is I'd like to move on to the facilitation process. And certainly the key to this facilitation process is ensuring both the product development team and the sales and marketing team are in the same room and working and collaborating together. That's the number one key. Walking into this particular facilitation, there are some assumptions, though, that I would like to throw out that I think need to be in place before we actually begin this facilitation process. The first assumption is that I, the facilitator, have met with management to determine their concerns and their expectations for this facilitation. So I sat down with both of the senior managers from both departments and actually, you know, spoke with them around outcomes, their expectations, and certainly went in and assessed the background and what was going on. And I've also met with some of the members from either team to understand their concerns regarding the way they handle this particular process. And also, it helps me validate if the senior management is actually on board or they're totally out to lunch.
Mm.
So I need to know if there's any disconnect there, so that helps. In this particular situation, there was no disconnect. And certainly that I have vetted the process that I'm going to take all you folks through with management to ensure that they buy into the steps and are willing to support the outcomes that come out of it. Very important.
Michael, I'd like to just a point to clarify is that you've seemingly just suggested that your intention is to get both groups together, and I wanted to ask about that. I guess there are situations where you don't want to get both groups together?
Well, I think if the tension was so bad and there was so much dysfunctionality in that particular process, and this is one I'd like to actually bring up in a further Teams in Trouble, we actually have to facilitate more of a mediation exercise. Because there is just so much animosity and frustration between both teams, bringing them collectively together is a nightmare. So it's almost like we need them in separate rooms and we need to facilitate a mediation. I typically will bring them together, but I am very assertive on process and on norms. But in this particular scenario, that wasn't the case.
Okay.
Most of the people on both teams they understood the need to get together. In fact, they were relieved by the fact that there's someone external coming into their meeting process to help them get something different, because the dance they were dancing, people were falling down, and they knew it.
Right.
It was pretty obvious. So what I'd like to do, folks, is I want to take you through a five-step problem-solving process that if you were to facilitate would take roughly 3 to 4 hours to facilitate. So you need to actually put an afternoon or a morning together where people in this particular scenario or having difficulties like this are willing to commit that kind of time. So it's just not like a one-shot, half-an-hour meeting. This is something where it gets pretty onerous in terms of demands from people to be candid and to speak their minds. And from a facilitator perspective, there's a lot of structure that you have to manage. So what I'd like to do is take you through these five steps. I'm not going to go into great detail on the steps because you're going to find that in the notes when you download it off of our website, www.facilitationfirst.com. But I want to give you a flavor of each one and essentially what we're doing. And, of course, Tom, you're going to ask me any questions in terms of if it's ambiguous or unclear, right?
Yes. And I actually have one right off the bat real quick. And maybe you can address this later. But when you went into the organization and talked to the upper management and you said, okay, I need 3 to 4 hours, half a day with these people, how do they typically respond to that?
Well, the first thing is that I didn't even know we needed 3 to 4 hours to start off with. I didn't know that until I started understanding I had an understanding of what the problem was. And then when I sat down and started to think about, well, now I understand the problem and management is telling me they want a higher functioning team at the end of this, where people are collaboratively and effectively working together. I had to think of, well, what kind of process, what are the steps that I need to put together in order to achieve those kinds of outcomes? And then I realized, okay, well, this is going to be a half-day thing.
Okay.
By the time I had actually drafted. Then I had to go back to management and say, here's what I've come up with. And by the way, a half day is really pushing it. A full day would be much more reasonable.
Wow.
But these, I mean, but I'm telling you, these people were like .com mentality. You know, let's get it done right now.
Right.
Or it should have been done 5 days ago. You know?
Right, right.
Which is not atypical for most organizations today, but they were expecting a process that would work quick, get it done, and let's move on.
And part of me just wonders why they didn't just try to, you know, set some kind of policy rather than bring you in, but it must have been evident to them that setting some kind of policy, like, could you imagine, product development team, you will now work harmoniously together with sales and marketing and vice versa. Okay, here we go. Matter dealt with.
You know what? You know what? The thing I really liked about working with this particular team is that there was kind of an essence of screw you. Like, if you don't like it, this is what we're going to do. So
no.
I kind of like that challenge. It certainly would scare the heebie-jeebies off of new facilitators. But for me, I really enjoy that kind of thing because I think people are... I'd rather have assertive people speaking up. Now, certainly the product development team was much more demure, and so making sure that they had their voice was very important. So in terms of the process, the first step of this process is obviously, before the first step is certainly setting the context, welcoming everyone. I had both of the senior managers actually welcome everyone and explain to them their expectations for the particular morning and what they hoped would happen as a result of that, and that is a harmonious, collaboratively working team. And certainly join the conversation and explain what their role was and what they were going to do. And my role, because this was a decision-making, there was aspects of the problem-solving process where the group would have to make decisions. I actually spoke about decision-making and spoke to them about how we're going to test for agreement. And in past Teams in Trouble workshops, I've spoken about the high five where people would raise their hand and by the number of fingers that they have up would attest to the degree of agreement for each decision that's put on the table. So I really went through the high five methodology and got them to understand that. And I also overviewed the meeting design, the problem-solving process, so they could understand it and address any questions for clarification. For me as a facilitator, it's very important to educate my participants up front on where they're going. So they know if we're turning left, if we're turning right, if we're going north, or if we're going south. I find the more I educate people on the process, the more they're willing to own it. So I think that's important.
So you laid out this five-step process to them.
Yeah, here it is, folks.
Okay.
And even before we got into this process, I made sure that the second step of this process, that is not the major part of the five steps of the problem solving, was to establish some operating guidelines for the morning. So how are we going to work together? So I asked them, what will happen if we don't achieve our purpose today? What are the implications? And people said, well, you know, we'll continue to dance the way we've been doing things. We're going to continue to feel frustrated. The clients are not going to get on-time delivery of the prototypes. So there was really clear reasons that they were coming up with instead of me telling them or getting the senior management to tell them why we need to do this. It was pretty obvious from the members' perspective of why we're there. And so I asked them, so based on that, what are the rules or guidelines we need to put in place today that will help, that I will manage and hopefully you folks will manage to ensure that you get value out of this session, that we achieve our outcomes? So people came up with things like, you know, one person speaks at a time, everyone has a voice, when we have a break, be back on time. So real kind of simple things that seem fairly natural, but when teams or groups get together without a facilitator, they seem to fall into, and that is people going off topic, people interrupting one another, people dominating, all those things we know that make meetings terrible.
Mm.
And certainly I also negotiate at my power. I mean, once we have those norms or guidelines up, I turn to the group and I said, so how much power do I have as the facilitator to now actually to mediate these or to make sure that you follow these guidelines? And people said, you have full authority to do that. And I gave them a few examples of what would happen if some of these guidelines were broken. And I asked them, is this okay? Can I do this?
Okay.
And I showed them what I would do. So if someone goes off topic, can I say, time out, Joe, I'm noticing we're not on purpose. Is that okay? And then I turned to the group and I said, that's what I'm going to do. Is that an okay intervention if people break a guideline? And everyone agreed, that's fine. And so finally now we set the context. We got the guidelines or norms for this particular session, facilitated session in place. Now we're getting into the problem-solving process. The first step of the process is naming the problem or understanding the nature of the problem. So the purpose of this is to ensure all the participants are on the same page as to the nature and extent of the problem. Because the actual nature and extent of the problem was, again, very siloed. What PD thought was the problem and what the sales and marketing team thought were the problem are very different. So it was important that people just kind of started to understand on a level playing field what's going on here. Some questions I asked were like, so what's the nature of the problem? Who does it impact? How often is it occurring? When did it begin? Where does it tend to happen? So I'm asking all the WH questions, who, what, where, and when, but I don't ask why at this moment. I'm not asking for causes. At this moment, that's going to be the next step.
I would imagine an inexperienced facilitator would just go in assuming that everybody understands what the problem is.
Well, in fact, forget about even the facilitator, though that's true. The team thought they understood what the problem was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they had very different points of view of what the problem was.
Right.
So it's about, this is just about kind of, if you can imagine a box. It's about understanding how big is the box, how much depth, how much height, how much width is the box, how big is this problem? And then finally, after I flip charted all that information, I turn to the group and I say, so based on what we've heard from both groups here, so what's the problem? What are we here to look at? Okay? And essentially what the problem was is how do we function more effectively with these two teams in place to actually deliver a prototype, a final prototype to the client. So that essentially became the issue here.
And did this group, after they went through this process of identifying the problem, did they say, were they able to say we have one problem, or did they say, well, gosh, this process has helped us see we've got 10 problems where we thought we had one before?
Well, in fact, sometimes that happens, and that's how come naming the problem is a very important step,
mm-hmm.
like the initial step of a problem-solving process, is because people are coming in with so many different problems and thinking what the problem is. So it was important to identify what's the critical problem here that we're going to focus on, and understanding there are multiple problems that have come up. So it's about just creating focus here, and that's what we came up with.
Okay.
And so there may have to be some prioritization that's built into this step, and I'm going to be talking about prioritization in other steps.
Okay.
We'll get there. So now we have the problem on the table. Now we could just immediately go into solutions. You know, so okay, so what? Let's brainstorm solutions around the problem. But the thing is that in most cases when problems are thrown on the table, they tend to be symptoms or effects, not the root cause.
Mm-hmm.
So if we went directly, Tom, into brainstorming solutions now, we may be coming up with Band-Aid solutions.
Okay.
And so no matter what people come up with, it may be that we're just kind of coming up with the kinds of solutions that in the long term would not eradicate the real problem.
Mm-hmm.
So step two is a root cause analysis. So we have the problem on the table now. So why is this a problem? Okay. And in this particular tool that I've included in these process notes for you folks to download is a tool called cause-effect charting. And cause-effect charting is just like a fishbone diagram. Some of you have done that, or a root cause analysis. And what you do is you divide the flip chart into two columns. If you can imagine a flip chart, and we divide into two columns, on the left column at the top, we label potential causes. And at the top of the right-hand column, we write cause or effect. The first thing that we do is I ask the group to brainstorm all the potential causes that underlie this problem of being an ineffective or not being a collaborative cross-functional team in delivering this prototype. What are all the causes? Why is this happening? And all they do is brainstorm, and I write them all under the left-hand column, which is labeled potential causes.
Now, could the potential causes turn into a Sally is just rude. You're just hard to work with, Sally. That's one of the problems.
Well, you know what? It's interesting because there was some personal attacks. As a facilitator with brainstorming, I've also explained to people up front, I've asked them, what are the rules of brainstorming?
Mm-hmm.
And that is free-flowing ideas, no debate, no questioning, no challenging. So as soon as I heard that kind of response, mm-hmm. I said, well, wait, time out. We're just brainstorming. And, by the way, all ideas count. So let's be careful about any personal attacks here.
So in the scenario, it was clear that sales and marketing, these personal attacks, but kind of the essence of it was one group thought that the other group was hard to work with.
Yeah.
So I mean, how do you address that in the brainstorming? It's not appropriate, I guess, to say you guys are just hard to deal with. How would you deal with a comment like that?
Oh, okay. So what you're saying is in terms of what the problem is.
Yeah.
The root cause of it is the
sales and marketing team. You're hard to work with.
Yeah, and you know what? If that had come up, probably what I would have said was, I'm hearing that they're hard to work with. I'd like to go a little deeper and say, so why are they hard to work with?
Okay.
What is going on that's hard to work with the other team?
So our responsibility is to dig deeper, get behind that comment.
Yeah, and we absolutely. Is it a process issue? Is it a systems issue?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a lack of understanding, an interpersonal issue? Typically, it gets down to a lack of structure, processes, systems issues when you start kind of peeling the onion.
Okay,
so I get all these causes. So if you can imagine, there could be about 20 causes there. And what I have to do now is I have to filter down to the top 1 to 3 causes. Because typically, it's not only one cause that's leading to this problem. There are usually multiple. But we can't do them all. So what I do is I start with the number one cause that was written at the top of the column. And I say, I want you to look at this particular cause, and I want you to let me know, is this a unique cause in itself, or is this actually an effect or a symptom of one of the other causes that are written in this column? And if it's a cause onto itself, it's not an effect of any of the other causes that are written down, in the left-hand column, right across from this number one cause on in the list, I'll write a C.
Okay.
Just to establish that this is a cause. And as I continue to go through down the list, I'm asking, is this a cause or an effect? And depending upon what the group says, I write a C or an E in this left-hand column. At the end of this, I'll have now a list of causes and effects for all of these items that were brainstormed in the left-hand column. And if I have, and typically I usually have quite a few causes that are considered unique, I'll then have to have the group prioritize or figure out what is the most important cause that we're going to focus on. Causes, like top 2 or 3 causes that we're going to focus on, if I have to. It might be self-evident that there's only 1 or 2 causes, and we'll focus on that. But if there are 6 causes, we may have to limit the number of causes just because it's the biggest bang for the buck. Typically, organizations don't have the resource capacity to work on all these problems, and we want to make sure that whatever plans people walk out with are doable.
Mm.
You know, they have one or two things that they're focusing on, and it's kind of like the Pareto principle. You know, you focus on the 20%, top 20% that are causing 80% of the problems,
right.
And that usually is good enough.
Right.
So that's what we're going to do. And so what I get the group to do is I get the group to think of what are the criteria that are going to help us prioritize these causes. And typically the criteria that come up with, well, the causes we should focus on are the ones that can be resolved in the next 6 months. They positively impact all stakeholders. They require no additional external resources, like me, the facilitator, to help out. And they should be resolved, let's say, before the other causes. So sequentially it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll talk about the causes and how they meet or do not meet this criteria. And then I get people to vote. Okay, I give them, let's say, three stickers. And I say, go place the stickers, one sticker per cause, and let's figure out which are the top three causes based on the number of stickers. We add all the stickers up. And those become the top two or three causes we focus on.
By the way, that one tool is wonderful. If you were to say you have one vote, it really changes the dynamics, doesn't it?
Totally. I think it's fair if we're going to say we're going to focus on the top three, you give people three choices.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only fair to give them the three stickers. Sometimes you can weight the stickers where you put, let's say one sticker is worth 1 point, another sticker is worth 3 points, and the third sticker is worth 5 points.
Right.
So when you put the 5-point sticker on a item, a cause, that really has weight because you add up all the points at the end. So it really will help show us the difference in terms of where people are leaning.
Yes.
Based on weighted stickers. Okay. So let's say we've come up with the top three causes. In this particular circumstance, the three causes I came up with was no consistent cross-functional communication and problem-solving strategies in place. Initial contracting process with the client was too loosey-goosey, meaning it lacked clear guidelines, and there was a lack of collaboration between both functions in defining the initial specs. So there were three top causes that they worked on. So now what I did was, in this particular circumstance, I divided the group into three teams. You don't have to do that, but I divided them into three sub-teams of four,
mm-hmm.
and I gave a cause to each team and got them to brainstorm solutions. So they brainstormed solutions, and then once we had, and then they fed back those solutions to the whole group. We had a whole group debrief, and people gave feedback. We tweaked some of the solutions that came up. Additional solutions were given, and then I got them to go back to their sub-teams, and now I wanted them to create a prioritized list of solutions, because there were, and one of the groups, they had like 20 solutions.
Oh,
like,
my
there's gosh. No way they're going to be able to do that. So we had to prioritize that. So again, we did the same methodology that I spoke about. They used the criteria in their sub-teams. They talked about how each of their solutions meet or do not meet the criteria, and then they actually use stickers to vote out what were the top solutions that they wanted to focus on. Again, they represented to the rest of the group what their solutions were. They got feedback from the rest of the groups, and then we went through all of the top three as a whole group, and we began to action plan. And the purpose of the action planning was now to make those solutions become a reality.
Mm.
So in this particular action plan, I looked at what will be done and how, who's going to do it, by when is this going to get done, what kind of resource prerequisites do you need in order to get this done. So do you need another team? Do you need senior management assistants? Do you need some kind of physical resources in order to support you? Is there budgetary implications with this?
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, the last column in the action plan was, what's the measure of success? How do we know we've actually achieved this particular action? What's the tangible result? And so we would actually define that.
Can you share the flow of energy, if you will? So you're the facilitator. You walk in with the group. it's in the morning. Let's say that you start it in the morning, this process, and you run, you start at 9, maybe end at 12:30, 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
And have you noticed a pattern in flow? I mean, by the end of this process, is energy higher? Are they calmer? Are they excited? What do you find?
Well, I think it's a really good question, and that is something I'm really sensitized to. When I walked in, obviously people are apprehensive. Who's this guy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't know anything about what we do. Okay, we talked to him a little, but, you know, are we going to be... So lots of apprehension around, is this worthwhile? So there was apprehension. Moving, by the time we got the norms and guidelines up there, by the time we were brainstorming, the energy was really high. You could really feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are all coming from a me position. Here's my idea. Here's what
right.
I think needs to happen. But as soon as we started, the sub-teams were beginning to filter down the ideas and had to prioritize their solutions, it was almost like they became really quiet. And the reason why is because people are beginning to move from me, my ideas, my solutions, to the we, to the us. What are we going to agree to? And this is where a consensus was happening and had to be built. And people had to listen to one another. And people had to eventually vote, but they had to vote from what's going to be most beneficial from our team perspective, using the criteria they came up with. So we moved from kind of a more of an expressive kind of high energy to a more concentrated, intense energy by the time they were prioritizing.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end, though, once we presented all the prioritized lists and people started action planning, there was a real sense of relief, and people felt full, you know, like satisfaction.
Right.
Like it was intense, but it was satisfying. You could really sense that there was not only people were happy in terms of the feedback and were excited about, you know, getting out now and beginning this new this action plan, but there was a sense of that this was really value add.
Right.
You know, this was worth it.
Right. Right. I love that, and it makes it worth. That's when you look at the group and you go, you know, this is what we were moving to, and doesn't it feel good to be able to get here? Yeah, of course, there's the other step of you contact them 6 months later, and where are they? You know, after they make the investment of this
Absolutely.
3 or 4 hours.
Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes the best thing in my case as a facilitator is they're not calling me back because it's working.
Right.
That's usually the sign it's working. But follow up with this group actually 3 months later on was that things were working and it was happening and there was true collaboration going and people were true to the actions. You know, so, and a lot of my facilitation is transferring these kinds of processes to people. So what I also heard one of the senior managers was that the same process was used with another problem that they had to actually resolve that issue. So it really, not only did they come out with solutions for this particular problem, they also had learned that process because I was educating them on it.
That's awesome.
Problem solving.
Well, we ought to... soon open up the lines. We've got about 6 minutes left, and what I'd like to do is offer everyone, we have Teams in Trouble Volume 1, which is our first 5 teleclasses, and we're going to be recording, these next 5 are going to be on Volume 2, but you can go to teachmeteamwork.com and my blog, tomheck.blogs.com, to find a copy of this CD, the first volume, and that will be available here. I'll make a new post so you can go right to it. We'll have this recording and a link to purchase the CD.
Excellent. So now we just have a few minutes. We'd like to open it up to you folks. And are there any questions regarding Tom's exercise or Mike's process? Any questions, anything that's ambiguous?
You know, I do have a question. This is Kathy at Trinity, and it's around personality conflicts and doing some sort of it. I know you referred to it earlier, but doing some sort of exercise using this model where people just aren't getting along in the department.
Okay. So my understanding is that there's a personality clash or cliques have formed. Is that it, Kathy?
Yes. Yes. And we work in a healthcare facility, and many facilities experience it. But yes.
You know, this is a real tried and true problem-solving process that is really applicable to interpersonal as well as task kinds of issues.
Mm.
So I would greatly encourage you to engage in this process. Tom, do you have anything around, let's say, the opening exercise, though, if we have clashing personalities?
Well, you know, in this, was it Kathy?
Yes, it was Kathy.
Thank you. There's another way to process this activity, and that is, instead of talking about handing off problems or looking at problems, what you can do is talk about connection, the connections that we have with each other and how they can get all muddled up and how we can untangle them, so to speak, so that we have a cleaner... We come from a more positive place because, you know, that's the metaphor that I would work with a group like this, doing the same experiential activity. And then also when it comes to personalities is teaching the concept of what I refer to as charge neutral, is being able to, as a facilitator, approach something that can be heated like that and just not matter-of-factly, but not... cold, but and not too emotional, but being able to address it from a clean perspective. I don't know if that made sense.
It did. That was very helpful, Tom. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Kathy, I just want to add one more thing. Tom, from my observation with the Inhuman Knot, is I think it's important for people to, as a metaphor, to understand how personalities, how we do get in knots, but that how collaboratively we can untie those knots, Kathy. And we need to all collectively work together, because if the team doesn't work together in a respectful and collaborative way, that knot will never get untied.
Or, and I'll add this, is that it can take much longer. So, for example, Kathy, instead of having everybody untangle the knot with their eyes open, ask them to do it with their eyes closed for a minute, and they'll see... It can take much longer. The metaphor being, the point I would make is, do we want to, as an organization, as a staff, as a community, choose to address this problem with our eyes open, or continue to address it, or attempt to address it with our eyes closed?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Well, we are getting a little closer to the top of the hour, and I know that there may be other questions. Please feel free to email either Tom or I to find out if you have any questions around process or the adaptability of our processes. You can email us. And again, you can download Tom's team exercise from tomheck.blogs.com. You can download my facilitation process at www.facilitationfirst.com. We just want to know from one or two of you folks, was this Teams in Trouble helpful? Was it helpful? Any feedback out there?
This is Roger. For having done quite a bit of facilitation, I think your demonstration today would be almost exemplary.
Thank you.
Wow, Roger, thank you.
Thanks, Roger. Anyone else? Okay. Hi. Okay, folks. We're getting a little some talking in the background, so I just like to, and it is coming to the top of the hour. I just like to thank you all for attending this particular Teams in Trouble series. Get out your calendars, because we have a new one coming up on February the 23rd, and it's at a time change. It's at 4 p.m. So this will allow all of our folks out east, to, particularly in Asia, to be able to call in. And we would like to, we'll send you an update in the next few weeks. Again, if you'd like to get our first Volume 1 of Teams in Trouble, where we have the first 5 Teams in Trouble series with all the exercises, all the facilitator notes, and also videos, You can get that off of Tom's website as well.
I won't hear anymore.
And we'd like to let you all know to have a great day. Thank you so much.
Thank you very
much. For participating.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.